First reading this morning is from the Gospel of Thomas, Logians 12 and 13. And I looked up Logians because I had not heard that word, and it means an ancient saying or maxim, generally from a religious teacher. The disciples said to Jesus, "We know that you're going to leave us. Who's going to be our leader then?" Jesus said to them, "Wherever you are to go to James the Just, for whose sake heaven and earth came into being." Jesus said to his disciples, "Compare me to someone and tell me whom I am like." Simon Peter said to him, "You are like a righteous messenger." Matthew said to him, "You are like a wise philosopher." Thomas said to him, "Master, my mouth is utterly unable to say what you are like." Jesus said, "I am not your master. Because you have drunk, you have become intoxicated from the bubbling spring that I have tended." And he took him and withdrew and spoke three sayings to him. When Thomas came back to his companions, they asked him, "What did Jesus say to you?" And Thomas said to them, "If I tell you even one of the sayings he spoke to me, you will pick up rocks and stone me. Then fire will come forth from the rocks and devour you."
This is Reflections on Stephen Covey's Habit Number 1, Be Proactive. It's from the Leader of Tomorrow website. Stephen Covey writes, "I am what I am today because of the choices I made yesterday." The first habit is all about self-mastery. It's about the ability to be proactive and taking responsibility for shaping your own life and destiny. Covey calls it the habit of self-awareness, of recognizing that you are not your thoughts or feelings and not what other people have made of you. The habit of proactivity puts emphasis on personal freedom, freedom to choose who you want to be and what kind of life you want to live. What does it mean to be proactive? The easiest way to understand the concept of proactivity is looking at its opposite, reactivity. Being reactive means you act in response to a situation or in response to the action of others. You are driven by feelings, by circumstances, by conditions, by your environment. In contrast, the behavior of proactive people is internally motivated and based on choices that they have made, consciously and unconsciously. Proactivity builds upon the ability to choose a suitable response, to be response-able. Being responsible means you are able to choose your own actions, instead of being controlled by external forces or internal emotions. You can choose how you want to behave and respond to what happens to you. It's about conscious choices using your free will. The habit of being proactive and responsible puts you in the driving seat of your life. You need to be responsible for your life and not hand over control to your mind, emotions, or other people. Master the skill of choosing your actions regardless of internal or external forces. Aristotle says, "We are what we repeatedly do."
Who are you? Who are you? Do you know who you are? Are you what other people say you are? Do you define yourself based on the name given you at birth, or even the name chosen by you later? Or are you more than that? Or less than that? Who are you? It's a great question, isn't it? I remember as a kid really struggling with this concept. Maybe it was because I was the third, you know? When you're the third, you sort of have to wrestle with who are you, because the name has already happened twice before in previous generations. And so I sort of knew who my dad was and knew who my grandfather was. And what did it mean that I had the same name handed down a third time, but was just this little kid? How does a little kid take on the name Sidney George Hall III? I defined myself pretty quickly as Sid. That seemed to fit more than Sidney, certainly more than George. Names are so interesting because they do define us to some extent. Whether we like it or not, we grow into them. We become that word, that name. And if we don't like it, like in some traditions, we can change that. And you don't have to be trans to change it. I've known people that have changed it just because they lived their whole life believing that they weren't who they were told they were and needed a different way of naming themselves. That naming is a part of us, and it's in our rituals. In our rituals of baptism, and it has something to do with our identity. But our identity runs so much deeper than just our name. In the ancient Jewish tradition, you were given a name at birth, and then you were given the opportunity to adopt a new name in adulthood that fit maybe your profession, your inner vocation. And so those names carried a kind of weight in their lives. And we see that even that name didn't quite define it. Judaism had an interesting way of understanding humanity. We've heard of original sin. I'm sure you have. That term was actually invented by Augustine in the 4th century. And when Augustine talked about original sin, he was saying that from the Garden of Eden days, back then, somewhere beyond time, we have been defined by an act of disobedience. And that that is who we are and will be forever. Except if you know God through Christ. You have the opportunity to flee from that. What's interesting is that in ancient Judaism, we don't really see that. The Apostle Paul, in the first century, talks about the old being, that one that is birthed through Adam, and the new being that is birthed through Christ. But he wasn't quite saying original sin. That idea developed a little later. What Paul was talking about, we know, because Judaism has never believed in original sin, didn't then, doesn't now, believes that human beings are basically good. What Paul was saying is that from the beginning, each of us have an identity of limitedness. We are all limited, and we're limited back to Adam and Eve, according to Paul's own mythology. But that there is an identity that runs even deeper than that, that we see in the previous story, that says when God made everything that was made, including the humans, God looked around at God's creation and said, "It is very good." And so you have these sort of conflicting stories, one that recognizes an identity that runs deeper than anything else, and that is that God doesn't make anything bad. Right? And then you have this other story that says, but things aren't perfect. Why aren't they perfect? Well, because we seem to screw things up a lot. Right? And they both are stories that Judaism felt they had to hold on to. And both identified the character of human beings. And so we see in this tendency, and in Jesus' day, there was another layer to it as well. And I've mentioned this before, that they believed that if you sin, if you miss the mark, you are not just doing something based on your own disobedience, but sometimes you're carrying something from the past, from your parents or grandparents. If you have a disease, for instance, that is not something that is your responsibility. It's something that your parents must have done or your grandparents must have done that creates this flaw, because certainly God would not do that. So it has to be the responsibility of your parents. So you see that by the time you get to Jesus in his interaction with the disciples, they've got all sorts of stirrings going on about what it means to be who they are. Who are they? What makes them up? How do they define themselves? The reason this is important is because in the Gospel of Thomas, something happens that's different than in the Synoptic Gospels, the Synoptic Matthew, Mark, and Luke. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus turns to the disciples and says, "Who do you say that I am?" Right? Same thing happens here in the Gospel of Thomas. By the way, this conversation never occurs in the Gospel of John. It only appears in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Thomas. But in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it all stays focused on Jesus. Well, some say that you're the Messiah, and some say you're the Son of God, or some say that you're John the Baptist returned from the dead. And Jesus said, "Well, who do you say that I am?" And then they make their own claim. And in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they don't claim that he's God, by the way. I'm sure you've read the text and you know this well. He is claimed to be the Son of God or the Messiah, but not God. You have to get to the Gospel of John before that claim comes into place. And so you see here in Thomas one step further. Jesus turns it back on them, basically saying, "But who are you?" And I love the cleverness of this. Thomas, Peter and another disciple say, "Jesus, you're the Messiah, basically. You are you're the new liberator. You're the great philosopher." So that those are the words for rabbi, Messiah. But Thomas says, "Master, we don't know who you are." And then Jesus says, "Don't call me master." Isn't that an interesting thing? "Don't call me master." Why would he say that? Why would Jesus say, at least according to Thomas, "Don't call me master"? What happens when you call someone master? Where does it put you? Subordinate, in the position of slave. We see in the Gospel of Thomas hints of things that became a part of the early church, and that is that if Jesus stood for anything, it stood for dismantling a power structure that had certain people on top and certain people on the bottom. It wouldn't work very well if the teacher giving the message played out the script in the opposite of one's own teaching, right? So Thomas seems to get that. But there's another piece of this too that I find interesting. In Thomas's gospel, Jesus is saying, "You're your own master. You are your own teacher." In other words, don't ask who I am unless it leads you to the place of asking who you are. Now, there are hints of this in the other Gospels. The song that the choir just sang is a great indication of that. Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, Not, I am the light of the world. What does he say? You are the light of the world. And so we see hints of this in the other Gospels. This image that Jesus is saying, there is something divinely appointed in you that you're not seeing. And as long as you make me the master, or Rome the master, or someone outside of yourself in charge, you get to keep being asleep to that. And what is it that you need to see? And that is that you somehow are my light. You somehow are God's light. You somehow are all that you need to be. You just don't realize it. So, you know, this weird passage, Thomas goes off and has this private conversation with Jesus. This is the stuff that where Thomas gets weird. And why it's called a Gnostic gospel. There are all these secrets going on. It's like, come here. Okay, Jesus, give me the truth. These other people can't quite handle it. So I'm thinking that probably is not really how it went down. That has more to do with the early church's own understanding of trying to figure out and sort through the meaning. But what if the secret was this? What if the things that Thomas was told by Jesus is that you are the one, you each are the ones called to be my light. You each are the ones called to express God's divinity in fullness in your own lives. Each of you are created by God as very good. Now, depending on where I would be in what stage of my life, I'm not sure I could handle that very easily. When I was a small child trying to figure out my name and what it meant, could I have handled being told, you have everything you need already within you? I'm not sure I could have done that. But at the time that I was doing psychotherapy in my late 20s, it was exactly the message that I needed to hear. That it wasn't the therapist that was going to fix it. It wasn't the religious sage that was going to fix it. It wasn't the mother church, the Methodist church, that I so loved and was giving my life over to that was going to fix it and take care of me. It had to be someone else. This struggle happens in our lives over and over again. We project it onto our spouses. We project it onto our bosses. We project it into our children. My meaning is wrapped up in you, and I have no meaning outside of that. Have you ever lived out that script? I sure have. But what if the script is that you have the capacity within you to be all that you need to be? Thomas' gospel somehow grasps a Jesus that sees such wonderful potential in every human being. And maybe that's one of the reasons why the Gospel of Thomas was so difficult to handle in the early church. It was so much better if we left it all up to Jesus to do. You know, I've shared this image before, but the image of Jesus knocking on the door in the garden, where there's no door handle, you know. Salmon, it's one of his many paintings in the 40s about Jesus. And, of course, Jesus has blonde hair and blue eyes, as he did in ancient times, in that picture. But, and looked very Norwegian, I think. But what's interesting is that the old paradigm was that if you let Jesus in your heart, it's going to fix everything. And you need to open the door. And there is some healing that happens. I had a powerful conversion experience when I was a teenager. where I felt the presence of Christ in me so powerfully that it changed my life. And I didn't have the ego capacity at that time to believe that I was worthy outside of that. So it changed everything. And so I'm not going to diss that at all. That's a powerful kind of transformation that can happen. But what if as you grow up, what if as you mature, what if as you allow questions to emerge, Jesus doesn't come inside, but Jesus takes your hand and pulls you back out into the world? What if the goal of discipleship is to bring yourself out into life, into healing, and to really buy into this idea that you are the light of the world that God is depending on for your neighbor, for your family, for your spiritual community? I believe that Jesus, whether there was ever a Gospel of Thomas or not, saw this in people. Saw it so powerfully. What would it be for us to take on that same viewpoint, not just of ourselves, but of our neighbors, of our enemies, to recognize that divine spark there in the eyes of the people around us? How would that change our worldview? How would that change our world? That's the kind of stirring question that Thomas raises for us. It's not an easy one. Like Covey said, it means being responsible, response-able, not reactive, not depending on others outside of you to define yourself, not depending on the system, the man, whoever to define you. You're not defined by that. You're defined by a spark that has been there from the very beginning, that proclaims to the universe, it is very good.